Congratulations. You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
We're here in a van.
No, it's the rocket.
Interviewing Christian Frock, journalist, Bay Area luminary.
I mean, I know you as a friend and as someone in the arts, but I feel like I don't know, kind of formally, I don't know a lot about you. Like, I'm kind of curious. Like, I know you were working with Catherine Clark for a very long time.
Not really.
Not really that long?
Going on 3 years.
Oh. So I'm just curious about, like, your background. Have you always been a writer? Did you go to journalism school? Like, what, you know, just sort of that whole kind of, like, worded, how did you end up where you are?
Good questions. I'm actually an accidental journalist. I did not go to journalism school, as many of the writers that we read did not. So I'm learning the rules of journalism as I break them, generally speaking. I did my undergraduate degree at San Jose State, and I did my master's degree at Goldsmiths, which is part of the University of London, and I studied curatorial practice there. And in my family, it was actually quite a big deal. I'm the first person in my family to go to college. I was the first person in my family to get a master's degree, to live in Europe. I do a lot of firsts.
Oh, damn. What do they think about it?
I don't know. I think they're still deciding. Yeah. When I came back to the Bay Area after I finished at Goldsmiths, I interviewed in a couple of different places, like in Chicago, and I interviewed in New York, and I interviewed in Oakland, and I ended up at ProArts. And I was the program director there for a year. And then I went to work for Catherine, and I worked for her for close to 3 years. And then I became a mother, and I had my first child was pretty high maintenance. He had really severe colic, and he screamed from like 2 p.m. till midnight. So it required rethinking my career paths.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that before Asa was born, I wasn't necessarily doing the exact thing that I thought I should be doing. I was working with artists. For me, it's always that the number one thing has always been about engaging with artists and their ideas. And so all of the different types of jobs that I've had have been about that. But when my son was born, that's when I began writing, because you can write at midnight and 2 a.m. and 4 in the afternoon. You can write all the time. And so my career as a writer kind of ramped up from there. And now I write for the San Francisco Chronicle and for KQED Arts and San Francisco Arts Monthly. I write for all three of them every month. Yeah, and then still doing curatorial practice. I have a project called Invisible Venue that I've been doing. Invisible Venue will actually be 10 this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Amazing. Thank you. It's cool. Yeah, it's very cool. I'm excited about it because it's an exciting opportunity to look at all of the projects and the sort of the trajectory of the different types of ideas that I've been working with artists on, projects and different types of things. And I also teach, like I'm sort of a, you know, kind of, I'm here and I'm there and I'm all over the place.
You're a busy lady.
Yeah. 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 I have 2 children now, so it's busier than ever.
I wanted to talk about your series Priced Out. And how it was just featured in Ben Davis's list of best things ever. And I just was wondering, because it is like a very emotionally weighty artist in the art scene kind of being pushed out of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Like what it's been like having people react to it.
Yeah, that series is tough, right? Because it's about gentrification. It's about artists having to leave the city and the Bay Area in general. It's about galleries going under, and it's about the changes in the city. And Priced Out is actually a really large format program that KQED does, and so my writing was part of it in terms of arts, but then they also did things with Forum, and they did a lot of different things. And that was really great that Ben called that out, because one of the things I really appreciated about making Ben's list was that it took the essays out of the context of the Bay Area. It showed that people outside of the Bay Area were reading them, this wider readership, which is really exciting. And then also what Ben said in his picks was that it tapped into something that's happening to artists all over the country. Mm-hmm. And the response has been It's been mixed. A lot of people felt, I got some very moving responses from artists saying that I was, giving them a voice and, really articulating what was happening to them. And then I also had some artists who felt like I was being a downer and, not really, in the Bay Area, there's a kind of a default to positivity, even in the midst of a disaster. And so I had some artists who felt like I was perpetuating a negative sort of impression of San Francisco. And Ben's list, I actually felt really vindicated when Ben wrote, when he wrote his list, because, it's not an easy topic. In the last year and a half, nothing that I've written about has been really easy. I sort of really have deliberately tackled very difficult subjects. I've always been very interested in how artists approach gun violence, and so I've been writing about that for a few years. Gentrification, displacement, the prison reform system, you name it. And it can be a lot, I think. That's why it's important to take breaks.
I was wondering if you could share something you're hopeful about.
Oh, yeah, totally. No, absolutely. Even though I write about really difficult things, the reason why I feel optimistic and hopeful is because I'm writing about artists responding to them and pushing back. So at the end of the year, because every publication now has to have some kind of list every day that gets circulated online, everybody wants lists, more lists, more lists. And so
like the best of kind of list? What do you mean by
lists, okay? Things you're looking forward to, worst list, better.
18 characters on the tutors that my dog looks like.
Yeah. Ben wrote a list of art cliches not to use.
I kind of liked that one, though.
I never said palimpsest. So I approached the idea of a list as responding to A.O. Scott had written this sort of ridiculous article for the New York Times about basically expressing a lack of confidence in artists and their ability to confront, really challenging situations in our culture right now. And I just thought it was ridiculous. I mean, there's so many artists doing so much work that directly challenges the things that are happening right now. So my list was about radical art and global movements in 2014. And I have for the last 3 or 4 years been writing a lot about how social media is leveraged as a kind of secondary protest strategy and how artists use it to manipulate projects or just to create like a dispersed community. And so I really enjoyed that. And I felt really hopeful about it because I think after the Occupy movement, there was such a crushing response to Occupy. And we saw people being water cannoned and, that sonic thing they do with to blow out people's eardrums. And you know, we saw that in New York when the Garner verdict came out too, they did the same types of things. And I think for a long time after Occupy, artists were just defeated. And there wasn't a lot of radical pushing back in the same way that there was last year. So even as last year was, I think, one of the most difficult that I can remember in adulthood for me, for all kinds of reasons. I mean, certainly there are other years that were more difficult, but in the last decade, it was one of the most difficult years that I could remember. And still, I felt really optimistic because artists were rising to the challenge and making a lot of difficult work and pushing back. And I saw amazing protests come out of the Ferguson verdict and the Staten Island verdicts in relation to Michael Brown and to Eric Garner. Amazing art projects come out of that. Certainly there were incredible projects as part of the Day of Anger in New York. You saw JR's sort of iconic image of Eric Garner's eyes leading the protests. Mm. It's exciting for me because it looks like America has remembered how to resist. For a while, it looked like they forgot. Or maybe it just was beat out of them.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're on a little bit of an upswing as far as starting to feel, again, like empowered to respond in creative ways, where I think when the sort of tech takeover started in this most recent boom, it sort of felt like, what the fuck? Like a little bit of a defeat. Holy shit, I think we're all kind of like, we're reeling from it because it was so quick and so intense. And I think just recently I was sort of feeling like, oh, I feel like we're kind of on this upswing.
Well, I think, too, the sort of crisis that was happening in the Bay Area with gentrification and rise of tech wealth in the city and this sort of free-for-all that took place a year ago last fall, I think it's slowed down, too. Like, there are measures that are coming into place that are slowing it down. There's some strategies of support for nonprofit spaces. There's been a lot of productive discourse about whether or not to let things that are failing fail.
Yeah.
Painful,
yeah,
but productive at the same time. And I feel like the rate of artists leaving isn't quite as dramatic as it was a year ago.
I wanted to ask you what your prediction for the Bay Area is.
Oh, wow. Gosh,
I guess specific to the arts. We can stay in that, obviously.
Or culture.
Yerba Buena, I think, is going to really transition to something different than what we've seen it be before. Mm-hmm. I knew the new executive director, Deborah Cullinan, is really invested in returning to the original mission statement of the organization and being very much about the community in a way that I think it gradually kind of moved more towards being an academic arts institution. And so I think she's reimagining all of that. I think that it still feels like an awfully long time before SF MoMA will come back. And its presence, I really feel its presence, all the its absence right now a lot. No one's ever asked me about what I think will happen in the future. And I don't know. I don't know that I've ever tried to imagine what the future will be. Because right now, the moment that we're in, it's really foreign. A lot of, like, people for a while would say, well, we had a boom and a bust before. We had a tech boom before. Mm-hmm. This is nothing like that one.
Yeah.
It's really different.
Yeah. I think that's why I'm asking. Yeah. Just because I'm like,
who fucking knows?
Well, who knows? Yeah. But we're also always, I think we're all, a lot of us are constantly thinking about it. Like, what's happening right now and where is it going to lead us? And it's definitely hard for me to grasp. So,
yeah.
This is someone who's also thinking a lot about it. Yeah. I wanted to ask you if you had any.
It's hard to say. Maybe more of the focus around the Bay Area's cultural shift to the East Bay. Mm. But at the same time, you know, I was in San Francisco tonight at this thing at Yerba Buena. There were 40 or 50 cultural leaders in the room, and they were all pretty much San Francisco-based. Mm-hmm. And there's still a really engaged and invested community there. And so the institutions might change in how we recognize them. They may not be the same. I don't know. I think it's going to be increasingly difficult for small grassroots organizations. And so there's going to be, you know, a lot of changes, I think, with that. And what I'm hoping for is that the wealth that's coming up in the city now begins to invest in the arts community. I actually felt quite hopeful about some of the programs the Battery has in place for teaching their members about philanthropy and arts patronage. And I think there are also a lot of big foundations who are working on becoming really transparent. I interviewed someone from the James Irvine Foundation. They're really invested in being completely transparent. And so kind of giving away the blueprint. That's what I say in my article. They give away the blueprint with their new website. Mm-hmm. You want to figure out how to invest your wealth. And I think that's a key thing, is that there's a definitely an interest in a return.
Yeah.
And so the Irvine Foundation is a really amazing example of that. You know, it started in the 30s by an agriculturalist who, I think the first grant was $1,000. Now they annually give away $69 million, you know. And I think anybody with a lot of money is going to pay attention to that kind of return.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that there's an increase in private philanthropy. And I'm really hoping that there's some sort of, like, a counterbalance to the aesthetics that seem to be taking over the city. Mm-hmm. And maybe some new types of organizations that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah.
And as always, congratulations. We always say at the end of the episode that we redact everything we said.
I redact everything I've said.
Why the Bay is better than LA. I'm starting to think that people are moving to LA not because they can't afford it here, and by people I mean art people.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they can't afford it here, but because they want to move there anyway, and then getting evicted or whatever just gives them a reason.
I think that's bullshit.
Suck on it.
No. Nope.
Well, because there's so many places in the Bay Area that are still affordable somewhat. Like Crockett. You ever go up to Crockett?
Yeah, Crockett's actually awesome.
It's beautiful.
I have been up there.
Just move up there.
It's quite far, Kate.
Okay, look, I'm not trying to say that being evicted isn't a horrible thing to happen to anyone. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I think a lot of the art people that go to L.A. in their heart always wanted to go to L.A. because there's a bigger market there.
I don't know about heart or any of that. I think maybe they've always considered L.A. as an option. But they probably also considered New York as an option.
Well, I'm just saying in fucking motherfucking England, people live in the same town since fucking year 100.
And?
Generations. People in America, every 10 years, you got to move.
So what?
I'm just saying, it's like our culture out here. I'm saying we got to fucking stay here and take a stand and say, fuck no, we're not all going to be leaving.
I don't even know. Basically,
you love the coyotes, you love the canyons.
And I think LA is a pretty good alternative to up here. My only issue really is all the driving. That's the one thing I can't deal with. But I think they're working on it, in which case it'll be even more available for all of us.
You know where has fucking canyons?
Where?
Mars. You want to fucking live on Mars, Mason?
Totally.
That's disgusting.
Is it disgusting?
Don't turn your back on our Mother Earth.
I haven't. So many others have.
Listen, pal. They got coyotes now in the Bay Area coming out of the wilderness and coming into the cities. We're talking Mill Valley, Novato, San Rafael. You got coyotes. All the coyotes you'd ever want. All you got to do, go up to the North Bay. Don't have to drive out to the fucking moral...
Why would I move to the North Bay? I might as well move to L.A.
You don't move there. Just go visit. Wherever you're going to live, where are you going to live in L.A.? Echo Park?
I don't know. Some canyon fucking land.
Silver Lake? Okay. They don't got fucking coyotes out there.
What are you trying to say?
I'm trying to say if you were living in L.A., you probably have to drive to see your precious coyotes anyway. We got precious coyotes here. It's even a shorter and more beautiful.
Too much. I feel defeated.
So you agree that the Bay is better?
No, I don't.
You were close, though.
No.
I'm wearing you down. What about when you do a studio visit?
I rarely do studio visits. What about it? I usually just want to hear about what they're working on.
Uh-huh.
And their ideas. I tend to be...
Do you kind of guide that, or you just kind of be like... I've had a lot of studio visits where the person's like, what do you want to show me? What do you want me to see?
Well,
I'm like, this, and this. And then I go totally insane.
I think my question would probably be more like, what are you working on these days?
Right.
You know, or if it were specific, if you're specifically curating a show, then you have an idea already of what you're looking for, and you can say... You know, I'd love to show some of your video works. Is there anything new that you're working on or anything you're really excited about that I should see or that you want to tell me about? Or maybe think something like that could work.
I've also had studio visits where in the time running up to the studio visit, I'll be like trying to make a completely new body of work.
Has that worked out for you?
To show them. And then they're always like, well, no, we're really just interested in this particular thing.
A particular piece?
All these, 35-mile by 89-feet shit
think,
that you just made.
I think oftentimes, for me, if I'm doing a studio visit, there's definitely a work that's prompted interest in the artist and interest in wanting to do a studio visit at all. Uh-huh. And so I'd probably let the artist know, you came to mind because of this one piece. I really... And
what else can you do that's that?
Or,
can
I mean,
just do more of that?
Not necessarily that, but I think it gives the artist a sense of what that person's interested in and looking for. I think there's some people who would say, have snacks and drinks and make sure you print out your artist statement and this and that. I don't
give snacks and drinks.
I don't think that's going
to
make that much
me.
Of an impact. It's like, we're all professionals here. More than likely, they're not trying to just hang out with you. It's a business call and, it's a meeting.
Business. That reminds me of the next topic of discussion.
Are we done with this topic, Kate?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's just always the same for me. It's just like they're going to come. I prepare as if, like, you know, like your in-laws are coming over. You want shit to look right. You got to hide all your porn. You got to hide all the garbage and mold that you've accumulated.
Yeah, get rid of all that shit for sure.
And you just kind of tidy up a little bit. And sure enough, they show up and they're like, hey, I really like this one thing you did. And you're like, oh, what about the 95 years I spent making these like sugar eggs with like scenes from the nativity inside? And they're like, that looks like garbage. Can you just do more of what is your one popular thing that you do?
Aww.
So whatever, it's all good.
You're getting typecast.
Well, isn't that always the way?
I think so, for everyone.
So good luck with that, artists.
Great.
Curators are weird. It is a little weird.
What do they do? What's been your experience
like you're
so far?
Almost like a test subject or something. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah. So what advice would you give curators? I think a lot of curators are interested in not making it be such an awkward experience.
Oh, I've never had, I'm not saying it's ever a bad experience. It just is an odd relationship. It's so unnatural. Things are just, you know, it's just a interesting power dynamic because the curator has power over you and your career and your whatever, mm-hmm. you know, they hold the keys, you
they
know?
Do. Yeah.
So, but you don't want to be like sucking up to them and being yeah. like a obsequious person, but you also, I don't know, you want to be respectful. I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. For me, it's just like every other fucking social interaction.
Do you come home to Katie and like relive it over
yes,
and over
yes.
and over again?
Poor Katie. So, I don't know. Honestly, every curator I've ever, you know, come across has been super friendly.
Great.
You know, I think a lot of people go into curating because they love artists.
Yeah.
And they love art and they get to deal with it in a way that's like fresh and exciting and not like, you know, soul crushing.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
At what point do you ask what your stipend will be, your honoraria?
I don't know. I was just thinking about this.
I was talking to an artist today, and they told me they had worked with a curator who, after she asked him what the stipend would be for the show, for being on a show, he literally said, and in a boasting way.
Wait, the curator did?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. In a boasting way said, I don't pay my artists.
Like, I don't pay my artists.
Just like,
I don't need to.
I don't need to, kind of a...
Who the fuck was that?
I can't tell you.
Was this a Bay Area person?
Sure was.
God damn it. And they were a curator for, like, a institution, not just a, like, not like a commercial gallery, like a place. Like
they were a place. A place.
Oh, God damn it. But I think it is important to be thinking about that.
Yeah.
Of the way in the beginning.
Yeah, and I think, you know, curators...
Or wait, should you not get it out of the way in the beginning?
No.
Wait until they've already got
yes.
your shit and you're like, listen, bitch, I'm taking my shit and leaving if you don't give me some money, because then you got them by the balls.
Listen, ready? Are you ready to listen? You got way too excited. No, it's good. I don't think you need to discuss payment in the studio visit, obviously. I think once they decide that they want to show
you
how to
get
work,
your foot in the door.
Once they're like, oh, you know, we'd really love to show your work, this piece or the new piece that you're working on.
Right.
And then you say, that sounds great. I'm really excited about the show. Can we discuss the, then you say, what's the stipend? What's the schedule? Just a little shout out to curators out there, people hiring or working with artists, that you got to pay them. Or, you know, you should try to pay them.
Duh.
And you should not avoid the subject. If you can't actually pay an artist, you should let them know right away. Be apologetic, because you should be. And it's like, it's maybe not like the worst thing in the world, but honestly, just like suck it up and recognize that that not paying an artist is not okay, but that you acknowledge it at least. You know what I mean? Like, don't fucking beat around the bush and pretend like it's okay and that artists should kiss your ass because you're a curator and that you don't need to pay them. Like, that's not appropriate.
Very upsetting. I find it very upsetting. Because nobody curates for free.
No.
Unless you're curating some super alternative art space where they don't have a budget at all.
Yeah, and I don't know. Probably not.
But even independent curators that are coming into a place and been asked by the place to curate a show,
yeah,
you're getting paid for
that. That's definitely part of the agreement. Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
If we're not right about this, curators who are listening, let us know what your experience is. 419-351-6606 or at Pine Tree Podcast on the bird-related bird world. We'll be right back. We got a letter in about our last podcast where we interviewed Steve Zavatero and Ray Beldner of the Startup Art Fair, which I think was very intense listening for a lot of our listeners.
I need to re-listen. I need to listen.
Well, it was very intense because...
It was kind of an intense interview.
It was like fucking Glengarry Glen Ross, wasn't it?
I didn't see that.
You can't close the leads you're given. You can't close shit. You are shit. Hit the bricks, pal, and beat it, because you are going out.
The leads are weak.
The leads are weak. The fucking leads are weak. You're weak. I've been in this business 15 years.
What's your name?
Fuck you. That's my name. You know why, mister? Because you drove a Hyundai to get here tonight. I drove an $80,000 BMW. That's my name.
Coffee's for closers. It's about real estate salesmen.
Okay.
Okay, so we got this letter in from, well, she didn't sign the letter, so I'm just going to say this is from a listener. She's writing in to elaborate about how while she was listening our last episode, she had to take a 24-hour cry break. She's happy to report that she stopped crying, but only due to physical limitations. Did you read this, Mason?
Of course.
This is what she says. Where do I even start? My words are spilling out faster than I can type them, and they are mostly very mean and not even vaguely constructive. Should I practice restraint or be totally free and then just redact everything at the end?
Yeah. Like,
firstly, I'd like to say that the world is what you make it, and the men of startup are making their own little piece of the world that they want to see. And I congratulate them for being proactive, for it is their own version of being hopeful. I love that.
I think that was sweet.
It was very diplomatic.
It was incredibly diplomatic, especially since she's needed a 24-hour.
Yeah, exactly.
She had a 24-hour binge of pain.
Yes. Maybe there are a ton of quality artists who will sign up, and it'll be a smash hit surprise. I'm totally willing to see it and find out for myself. In fact, I think it would be super cool if we did a Congrats Pine Tree listener field trip / episode when the time comes. I wish you guys knew how disorganized we are. Just to get us in this room right here to record this was like...
I almost got into an accident.
I don't even know.
The traffic was terrible.
I mean...
It was not hard. We had a plan.
Well, our interview this week, everything...
Well, that... I don't know what
everything.
That. I'm not even going to go there. Nope.
Everything we do takes great pain. So a field trip, we'll think about it, but I'm just saying logistics are not our strong suit. Anyhow.
I don't agree with that.
Your guest who said art is a business is a person who exists, and I will give him credit for that. As an authority on how it is, however, I am tempted to look elsewhere. The explanation of this new style of art fair feels like a strange, waffly no man's land between Art Basel and radical thought, with a if you can't beat 'em, join 'em air of resignation. If you're cynical, you can say resignation. If you're a positive thinker, you might say he's just going with the flow. Things are changing either way you slice it, and this guy is hopping on board. What can I say in words that really gets to the meat of what the fuck is wrong with this? It seems so obvious that words fall short. The world is moving really fast. It's hard to slow down and find meaning in anything as shipping containers change hands in creepy trading floor rhythm. So much and nothing much is happening all at the same time. I'm trying not to see these two camps of people. Ugh. But I keep returning to it, so here it goes. Weepy, giant-hearted losers who can't get their $2,700 together and the jerks that make them feel that way. Fuck that. See you at the show, and I redact everything except that I love you guys. I love that.
I know.
You
it
know,
was the best. It was really such a good response.
Maysoon, you know, we don't get a ton of feedback from listeners, but when we do, it's really high quality.
It's pretty, I feel like it's pretty, what's the word?
Considerate, thoughtful.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I was very uneasy after putting the last episode up.
Yeah.
Waiting for the, you know, backlash or something. But.
Well, yeah. I mean, the backlash against us or just backlash in response,
I don't know.
Too?
I don't know.
I think it's totally okay for us to be interviewing people who we might not have the same views with, or you or I, one of us, or both of us might have different views with, or completely disagree, or...
No, totally.
You know, I think that's okay. And I actually think the right, I think we're kind of on the right approach, is that we should just
well,
be
Well, I just worry
to...
that we're not being Terry Gross enough. I was talking to somebody about Terry Gross.
Are you kidding me?
I hate Terry Gross too. Okay, I don't want everybody to be mad at me about it. People call her Saint Terry, but I really am not a fan.
Terry Gross.
I feel like NPR has really been letting me down lately.
She's such a softball. Softballer.
Well, I feel like when she has transgender guests on, that she is very disrespectful to them. And I find
really?
It very upsetting. Yes. Anyhow, point is, we're not exactly like, you know, we're not journalists.
We sure aren't. We need some advice.
A couple of people that just so happen to have recording equipment.
I know. The blog is free, people. Honestly, anyone could do
we're
this shit.
We're doing our best. So, but overall, I think it went well, and we've gotten a lot. I don't know. I've seen a few people discussing it, so that's happy.
Congratulations!
You've listened to another episode of Congratulations Pine Tree. We recorded this, and I did a whole rant about Invisibilia. Maysoon's constantly rubbing the microphone. This week has been another banner week of recording difficulties. But thank you for bearing with us. That's it.
That's it.
See you next week.
See you next
without
week. Except for we won't see you next week.
You, just call in. Make this a little more equal of a relationship.
Yeah. We need you to come through, listeners.